Welcome to Tidings. This is Hazel Kahn. It's been 10 years since I introduced a Tidings program with these words, full disclosure. I don't think tipping is a good thing, and I don't like what it does to people. I also believe that hardly anybody will agree with me, but that many will strongly disagree. End quote. Not Eleanor Roosevelt, though, who commented in 1938 that tipping was the unfortunate, quote, result of an insufficient living wage, end quote. But things change. 2 years ago, New York restaurant mogul Danny Meyer announced that after, quote, a robust conversation with his entire company, tipping will be eliminated throughout his group of restaurants. No more cash on bar, table, or coat check. No more tip line on the bill, and with it, he hopes for a more equitable, competitive, and professional compensation system for all employees. An enlightened development that only a curmudgeon would fail to applaud. But please don't think that this appreciation indicates that I've abandoned my decade-ago concerns about the elitism of the big tip culture or the colonial relationship between server and guest. The looming presence of money as the meal ends and tip calculation begins. The tip-based inequities between the front and back of restaurants. The class structure lying at base of the so-called hospitality industry. And most outrageously, the restaurant owner transferring to the customer the responsibility for paying the employees. How did that ever become acceptable? But let's be kind. Let's be kind, give credit where it's due, and be optimistic that with the elimination of tips, hospitality will now indeed be included in Mr. Meyer's restaurants, rather than the guest specifying and paying an incremental charge. In a letter, Meyer wrote, "The total cost you pay to dine with us won't differ much from what you pay now, but for our teams, the change will be significant." Meyer is not alone in his attempt to undo the inequities caused by tipping. Other restaurant owners are experimenting with rationalized schedules, profit sharing, job mobility within the restaurant, because such inequities, rooted in 15th century Tudor England, which is where the practice of tipping began, such inequities are increasingly unsustainable as we eat our way through the 21st century. Will tipping be one more institution to face first scrutiny and then the dismantlement threatening other long-held beliefs in this new political era? For now, though, let's go back to 2008 and listen again to an assortment of waiters, bartenders, international snippets, and me expressing our views on tipping. Tipping is deeply embedded in American culture, which means we have access to hundreds of books and articles about the etiquette and how-tos of tipping, a compendium of tipping situations with guidelines to what constitutes an appropriate tip. You won't, however, find a debate about whether tipping is a good or a bad thing. Such controversy does not exist. But whether I agree with it or not, the tipping industry does exist, to the tune of $17 billion a year when last measured. Politically correct tipping wisdom boils down to two questions. First, when and whom should I tip? Should I tip the owner, the funeral director, the mover, the valet, the blackjack dealer, the bathroom attendant, the hairdresser, the UPS guy? Somewhere, somehow, the pundits and legislators of tipping have drawn a line in the sand so that we must tip the bartender and barista, but not the barrister, the street musician, but not the orchestra conductor or subway conductor, the taxi driver, but not the bus driver or airline pilot, the one who delivers pizza, but not the one who delivers babies. Once these fundamental lines about who and when have been drawn, the science part, if you will, we get to ask the second question. How much should the tip be? Here is where art and heart come in. Your personal beliefs and values, your assessments of the person to be tipped, your own history, experience, and standards combining with what society and tradition dictate. These raise thorny questions about what size tip
constitutes the minimum, the punitive, the reward, the insulting, the generous. Mulling over the size and the variability of the tip converts us into teachers, parents, judges, soulmates, social workers, psychologists, social activists, and who knows what else. It seems there's more to tipping than the tip. Since I'm against tipping, all these questions, of course, become moot. I can't shake off the conviction that the employer, not the guest, should be responsible for the employee's income, even though I understand that a good service person can take home a lot more money than any fixed wages the employer might offer. I'm a survivor, and I try not to consciously provoke social disapproval, and I quite like having friends who like me. So I confess, I do tip. Of course I do. I have to. Reluctantly, perhaps, but every single time that I go out to eat, I tip. I'm an average tipper, doing what etiquette dictates, but not expressing myself through either excessive or miserly tips. For me, tipping is not a way to applaud or chastise or bond with those who serve me. I feel uncomfortable with the idea of regulating somebody else's behavior by arbitrarily loosening or tightening my purse strings. If I were to paint a picture that would illustrate this tipping transaction, it would be about hands. I would have the waiter standing with his hands open and the sated eater sitting at the table with his wallet or purse open as he or she riffles through the coins and bills. In this picture, power is clearly in the hands of the diner, the patron, the tipper, with a moat thrown between him and the tippee. Michael Lynn, an authority on tipping at Cornell's School of Hotel Administration, describes the economically irrational aspects of tipping. That is, the rewarding of behavior over which one has no control because it is already passed. He argues that tipping reflects the customer's embarrassment at being in a superior financial position vis-à-vis the server, which is a leftover from the British class system, where tipping those socially inferior serve to display one's own wealth and to underline the imbalance of status and power.
Once I build a tower to the sun, build of brick and mortar and lime. Once I build a tower, buddy, can you spare a dime?
I was really happy when I found a kindred spirit in the person of Peter Tupper, a writer for the British Columbia-based daily online magazine called The Tie. Unfortunately, he wasn't available to be interviewed for this program, so his words are being read by Danny Gregory. Describing tipping as a class struggle one meal at a time, Tupper expands.
Tipping is the front line in the class struggle, where pocket change for one side means a decent living for the other. The implied threat of sabotage by slighted tippees goes back to the days of veils. There are apocryphal tales of travelers' baggage being tagged with discreet chalk marks, indicating their tipping proclivities to initiated servants, or diners being pursued outside the establishment as a not-so-gentle reminder. More recently, one hears about various bodily fluids added to orders. Poor service was the more common retaliation. Even in the Soviet Union, tipping was ubiquitous enough to prompt disdainful editorials calling it a survivor of capitalism that humiliates the honor of men. Many etiquette guides preface their sections on tipping by saying that the practice itself is disagreeable. Not only does it add an extra expense and element of complexity to dining out, it reminds people of a time when servants were dependent on the generosity of their social superiors. Others say that management has somehow shifted the responsibility for servers having living wages to the customers.
Tupper ends by saying, I've lived mainly off freelance work for the past few years, and if there's anything worse than working for tips, it's freelancing. But Gail, confidently disagrees with me and with Tupper. I interviewed her on the waterfront deck of one of my favorite local restaurants, where she is a very successful waitress. She likes her work, and she feels that she's as much, if not more, in control of the relationship with the people she serves as they are. She does not feel at all oppressed or condescended to. Although sometimes international customers can create differences in expectations.
It's always very funny the way that people are and how, you know, the tips that you think you're going to get versus the tips that you actually get. Like, you know, a lot of times, because I've been waitressing for a while now, so I think, oh, I know what this person's going to do or that. And either, you know, you think they're going to be really cheap or you think, oh, they're going to be really great tipper, because they said, like, I had a lady last night and she's like, thank you so much. You really made our whole evening, like, as pleasurable as it could have been. And then their bill was like $107 and she ended up leaving me like $14. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm glad that it was so memorable, but do you know that that's not anywhere close to 20%? I'm trying to be as personable and as, you know, upbeat, of course. But, you know, I mean, I always pretty much am myself. I mean, I have good days and bad days like anyone else, but, you know, you can't go around the people complaining. But then some people want you to be like that, you know. Some people just come here to eat and have a meal, and then some people come to, you know, like, make a new friend or something, or so it seems. You know, and some people want you to be, like, the life of their party, and some people are having their own party, and they just want you to serve them, you know, food and drinks. So it all depends on, you know, I like waitressing because it's always different. Like, when I come in, you know, from one shift to the next, sometimes it's boring, sometimes it's slow, but sometimes it's crazy busy. I like the variation in, you know, in the flow of what's going on in a night. So for me, I just try and, you know, give the best service possible. Be, you know, as with the people as much as they want or not there at all, you know, depending on how they are. And I find that, you know, good tippers and the bad tippers, it all kind of evens out in the end.
Do you resent the fact that your well-being, your income is in somebody else's hands and you don't really have that much control over it?
Well, I find that I do have control over it. And for the most part, you know, like, it pretty much all my tips average out in the end, like, to 20%. But I find that, you know, I make, you know, sometimes more, sometimes less, but, you know, more than I would make if I was just making a salary. You know, like, I had a table of four guys one night at an Italian restaurant that I worked at, and their bill was like $200, and then they gave me $400 tip. You know, I wouldn't get that if I was just making a salary or on New Year's Eve, make $800 on New Year's Eve just for working, you know, 6-8 hours.
So you don't feel any resentment, sort of this idea that I have, which is, I mean, I've frankly never been a waitress. But it's just, it feels to me that people are condescending, or that, you know, that they're paying you. It's not a set amount of money. It's up to them. So that means it's kind of arbitrary, and it's, I don't know, this is my feeling. But as I say, I'm interested in your feeling.
Right. You know, I have another job during the day that I work at where I get paid an hourly wage. And people are, you know, I don't find people to be any more or less condescending. I find people to be pretty much, either they're nice people or they're, you know, not nice people. So I work here because my day job, you know, I make more per hour here than I could make over there. So for me, you know what, it comes down to, I have to make a certain amount of money by the end of October, and then I get to leave. So, you know, I'll be as nice as I can be, or as nice as I am, or, you know, as nice as I need to be, just so that I can do what I gotta do, and, you know, and I'm fine with that. I'm not, you know, waitressing, it's like, yeah, you can't walk around being like an unhappy, schlumpy, you know, mess, otherwise you're not gonna make good money. So for me and my personality, it works out fine. And, you know, if I can make, you know, $400 or $500 in a day, then I'm happy at the end of the day.
I'm glad Gail is my waitress, and I'm glad she feels that her tips even out in the end to 20%. But that doesn't deny the existence of tipping anxiety, a dynamic that, in my experience, women are much more heir to than men. How many times have I been with my women friends, a group of three or four of us huddled, looking at each other, staring at the bill in front of us, intimidated by the calculations that await us, voices lowered, brows furrowed, wondering what happens if we double the tax and add a bit. What's that? Let's make it another $5. Divide by four. What's that? You know, she was really nice. She brought the bread and drink so quickly. She didn't complain when I spilled the wine. God, that was so embarrassing. This is probably not an unfamiliar scene to you. Empathizing because once upon a time they themselves may have been on the other side of the table, my friends remember their own experiences, righting the wrongs done to them in those former lives, while our harried but patient waitress pretends to be oblivious to the small passion play being enacted behind her back. But whatever my peculiar quasi-socialist beliefs may be, tipping in our culture has become mandatory, a fact of life, it's a social contract. By going into a restaurant, you agree to tip the service staff. That's all. By violating the agreement, you're a curmudgeon at best and unethical at worst. In America today, you ignore the conventions at your peril.
Of course, WPKN would never ask for a tip. But the fact is, our transmitter is almost 50 years old and its days are numbered. Our generous listeners have contributed most of the funds we need to buy and install a new transmitter, along with associated equipment. But we're not quite there yet. We need to raise another $15,000 by the end of the month. WPKN without a functioning transmitter? Banish the thought. Instead, please go to WPKN.org, where your click on the donate button could be the one to put us over the top. Would you? Could you? You know how I feel about tipping, but this is different. Did you? Ah, thank you.
Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, and now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Don't you remember? I'm your pal, buddy. Can you spare a dime?
Consider the meaning and the provenance of the word tipping. It is said that the word tips, T-I-P-S, has its roots in to ensure prompt service, which may indicate that once upon a time tips were offered as an incentive before service was provided. In Germany, Trinkgeld, or drinking money, is the word for tips, the same idea as the French pourboire. In the Middle East, it's bakshish. To me, at least, all of these terms have an air of condescension or trivializing about them. I visualize the word tipping being accompanied by a pat on the head or a turning away as the patron leaves the Trinkgeld on the table or hands it to the taxi driver. Tipping is not usually accompanied by a full-faced eye exchange, as it is, for example, when one gives a birthday gift or presents the hostess with a bunch of flowers. This suggests to me that a tip is an unequal exchange. On one end is the donor, the benefactor, the patron. On the other hand is the grateful recipient, metaphorically at least, raising his hand to touch his forehead in a weak salute, or perhaps a tug of his forelock in fealty or deference. The waiter, and here I include all the people who expect a tip to augment their income, bellboys, messengers, taxis, croupiers, belly dancers, the waiter does not know in advance to what extent his special attentiveness or his perfunctory or even neglectful service will bring a reward. In that sense, it's a loose relationship between cause and effect and an unpredictable business proposition, even though there has actually been much academic and field research about what increases or decreases the size of the tip. Bending on one's knees while describing the menu is apparently a good thing to do. Ultimately, the size of the tip depends on the mood of the one signing the check. The waiter has really no choice in the matter, except perhaps to refuse the tip, but I'd be surprised if that happens very often. Anthony does duty both as bartender and waiter in the same restaurant where I found Gail. His friendly, open manner and his enthusiasm about the positive relationship between the way he performs and the way he's rewarded does not prevent him from acknowledging the tension that can surround the ritual and the reality of what happens at tipping time when actual money is transferred from one person's hand to the other.
I mean, I guess I would say that I would not prefer to have a base salary. I think what drives me in this type of environment, this type of job, is the fact that it's you know, it's performance-based. Although that's they have that in other jobs, but it's you know, it's performance-based right now. You know, you show up, you put up or you shut up, you know, type of thing. You
have it's a very, to, very direct.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, yeah, exactly. It's very direct. And use that as motivation, you know, because, you know, if you know, you're working harder, you're getting money, you feel that you're making money, you know, that type of atmosphere, I think, for me, you know, helps motivate me and leads me to be a better worker.
Do you ever feel that, you know, your life is in their hands?
Yeah, I mean, I guess especially you feel like that after, you know, you get like a bad tip, and then you definitely are, you know, you're upset, and you know, it kind of, you take it. It's two levels, because you take it personally that you perhaps didn't do something right, and then you're also like, wow, I just wasted all that time and didn't get paid, compensated correctly for it. But I just think that, you know, what has drawn me to this job and staying in this business is the performance based and how I'm able to make more money, I believe. Could you imagine waiting at a table, you know, they're like, oh, I'll give you the tip right now. It's like, that's so demeaning. And they're like looking through their wallet and like they're asking you, not only are they, you know, getting their money, but you have to sit there and watch them dig through the money. You're like, oh, is that going to be a 5? Is that going to be a 20? And you see you pull out the 20, you're like, all right. And then they're putting it back in maybe for the 10. You know, that's especially when it's right on the spot. Yeah, you know, sometimes these people just want... You know, they're trying to get it over with quickly, but, you know, that situation in particular where you're waiting for them, or even if it's on a credit card and, you know, they've come up to the front of the restaurant and they're like, oh, okay, I'll sign it right here. And so you're standing there next to them and they're, you know, picking out a number and, you know, it is very demeaning. That is, yeah, I would definitely agree with that, especially those, in the, you know, parts or when they're digging through their wallet and, you know, you're like, what's he going to give me? And, you know, it's weird. It's demeaning and it can be, you know, awkward. It's definitely awkward. At some point, you know, if you're waiting long enough, you're not even caring about what they give you. You just want to walk away, you know, because, you know, it's like, what did he do? Was he good? Was he bad? You know, and you can see them, like, thinking about it and, you know, judging whether they have enough money to even leave you. It's just the whole, that part of that is, you know, very awkward.
Does all this mean that tipping must be understood as an exercise in power? Urban legends abound, and maybe some of them are actually urban truths, about the secret ingredient that might be added to a dish sent back to the kitchen. You know what I'm talking about. What is tips spelled backwards? That was a sly question asked by one waiter who seems to know what he's talking about. Complain at your peril or resign yourself to anxious uncertainty when the waiter comes back from the kitchen with a newly improved dish that you rejected. Rather than make yourself crazy, you may very well decide to keep the dish, not to complain, and, perhaps or not, reduce the size of your tip. Now who has the power? Tipping is one thing in America, but it can be quite different in other cultures, where it's shaped by fewer assumptions and rules. Sociologists point out that tipping tends to be more widespread in those countries where people feel uneasy in the physical presence of unequal relationships and clear status differences. Think about tipping as a kind of temporary income redistribution, and you can see how it might work to briefly reduce that inequality, although ironically, of course, the tip is itself a statement about that unequal relationship. American tourists are often confused by tipping etiquette in other countries, and they feel more comfortable doing what they're used to back home, which in turn has altered the cultures in those countries. In former or presently communist regimes, China, Russian, Kosovo, Slovenia, Croatia, Bulgaria, Cuba, for example, tipping is not expected. This is also true in Israel, whose early settlers arrived in the country with socialist principles. In some European countries, where a service fee is automatically included in the bill, tipping is considered unnecessary, although sometimes small coins may be left on the table as a token of appreciation. In some Asian countries, tipping for services other than food can be frowned upon. Although globalization is changing the tipping landscape, tips have not traditionally been expected or required in countries like Malaysia, the Philippines, or South Korea, or in Taiwan, Japan, Iceland, or Norway. In New Zealand and Australia, tipping can be considered condescending, rude, or insulting, raising the specter of servitude. In England, one might tell a taxi driver to keep the change, although the driver may be as likely to round the fare downwards, in effect asking you to keep the change. Psychological theories and international anthropology aside, I would much prefer not to think about money, my wallet, or the server's income while I'm eating at a restaurant, even if the menu prices make such thinking inevitable. The complexities of tipping create an unpleasant finale to a meal, with money the last thing one processes after draining the coffee cup and before standing up to leave. I will always think tipping is not a good thing.
But please don't take that to mean we don't want you to make a donation to this wonderful radio station. No, 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 you mustn't think that. As I mentioned earlier, we need your help to fund a new transmitter so we can replace the workhorse of a transmitter that's brought us such a long way for so many years. For 50 years, our transmitter was transmitting away, day after day, when everyone was younger than they are today, and our transmitter was young and strong and beautiful. If you'd like to join us and all the generous listeners who want very, very much to make sure that WPKN will go on transmitting without missing a beat, please go to WPKN.org and hit that donate button so that WPKN will never stop transmitting all that music and news and interviews and music, music, music. That is one change we do not want to see. We thank you. You've been listening to Tidings on WPKN Radio, streaming on WPKN.org, archived on hazelkahn.com, and produced by Tony Ernst.